I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Go.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
And welcome to Two in the Think Tank.
And welcome to Two in the Think Tank.
The show where we have lost
five sketch ideas.
Any kind of musicality.
Well, you know what's happened, Alistair, is you used to work pretty hard to elevate me to the realms of listenability, but I think that recently you've started seeing how badly I'm fucking it up. And then trying to end it on your own terms, like a some sort of, you know, terminally ill person. And I don't think that's fair.
I try to pose the question with each song. What would it be like if this song didn't want to live? And joining us today, that's not my interpretation though, Andy, but thank you. But yeah, joining us today is Adam Carnevale from Science Pants Radio.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me on. It's actually pronounced Knievel.
I am so sorry. Yeah. I forgot that you...
No, it's a common mistake.
Is that Midwestern?
Yeah, it is, actually. It's Midwestern. Don't worry. That surname trips up a lot of stunt actors. Apparently, there's a lot of different ways to spell it. Yeah.
Mm.
My problem is
I was going to say stunt actors should not be easily tripped up. I mean, that should be one of the...
Absolutely. That's basically a job requirement. Or if they are tripped up, they should be able to easily recover.
Yes, or spectacularly fall through the upper railing of a saloon bar onto the top of a wagon covered in dust.
Yes, yes, yes. Those are the two different ways that you exit a saloon in a Wild West. You either fall onto the top of a dusty old wagon, or you leap out and you land perfectly on your horse to ride off. There are no other options.
I don't know if this is a sketch idea, but is there a sketch? I mean, look, is this too lame? But there's the idea of a guy who's such a bad stuntman that he rides his motorbike so beautifully in one of the most graceful ways. I mean, he misses the jumps, he does, he misses the tumbles, but it's a joy to endure.
His defensive driving skills are so strong that they can't be switched off, and he actually, you know, he avoids what would be very, very close scrapes before he even gets into them.
You know, the
very
best...
often by just choosing not to drive that day at all.
There's a whole movie to that idea, I think. An entire movie based around a stunt actor who ruins every shoot he's on because he can't do the stunt. He's either too good at it or too bad. No one can figure out which one.
It's like seeing a graceful ballerina trying to do a pratfall, but just moving towards the ground in the most elegant kind of just everything folds and lands so softly. I would like to see a sort of a really well-trained dancer take a, like, you know, just fall through a pane glass window.
Yeah.
I'd pay to see that in
more
slow
a personal
motion.
Fetish of mine than it is related to the current conversation.
You know, they say that the best defensive driving is offensive driving.
I had an idea when we were talking about saloons. By the way, the best defensive driving is... No, okay, all right. Alistair, let's do your idea.
No, no, no. There's nothing more there. There's nothing more there than
Alistair. Alistair. You know, why can't that be an entire sketch? Why can't it be you show up to the first day of your defensive driving course and they tell you that the first, you know, what's the first rule of defensive driving?
You don't talk about defensive driving club. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the second rule is always attack, you know. you can be one step ahead. Especially if they think you've done a defensive driving course, right? So that they think you're going to be, you know, a bit meek about it, a bit retiring. But then that's when you get them.
Surely that sketch works really well if you've got like a destruction derby driver as the instructor or whatever for that. Then you've got that, like, the guy comes in. Maybe he's missing an arm. He's got, like, a pinned-up sleeve or whatever.
Yeah.
A scar on one eye. He's like, look, the only way to stop them from hitting you is to hit them first.
Hit them. Yes.
Yeah.
but also, can we just pencil in the idea of the defensive derby, which is combining all these ideas that we've had so far. And it's a demolition derby. But... you know, everyone's an expert defensive driver, so they spend the whole time, you know, letting each other pass, following the speed limit and doing perfect reverse parks.
Well, they would move around, like from above, they would actually replicate what like particles in a gas, just moving around, all missing each other. Like that, I assume that's how.
Maybe the setup.
No, I think you're thinking of a Bose-Einstein condensate, where they act as one superparticle.
A Bose-Einstein. Ooh. Oh,
Me and Andy talk about a lot of rare states of matter.
I might happen to have noticed you tweeting about rare states of matter not too long ago as well.
Well, trust me, there's going to be a lot more of that kind of stuff. That's what I'm.
Yeah.
I realize you have to find a niche, and for me, it's rare states of matter.
The only state for me that isn't rare is when I'm tweeting about states of matter. I do that all the time.
Maybe the setup to, just going back to the Destruction Derby sketch, maybe the setup is that you've got that defensive driving instructor and the offensive driving instructor, and they get mixed up on which class they're going to. So, yeah, you've got the defensive derby and the offensive driving.
Of course, yeah. I think for some reason in my mind, I keep seeing... the offensive driver, driving guy, telling you to just grind up against the curb when you're driving, when you're parking or whatever, and not let the curb win. Like you've set up your tires so that you just grind that curb away until it just hits the grass.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
You know how they got confused? One of them's surname was Knievel and the other one was Cannavale. And,
yes.
Trips up a lot of stunt driver booking organizers.
They go, these words look the same.
Can I? It's an entirely verbal system. It's a verbal tradition, stunt person booking. It's all oral.
100%, yeah.
Anyway. I want to say my thing about the saloons, all right? Mm-hmm.
No.
Yes. If I was one of the McFlintock gang, right? Ruthless bandits,
classic.
Right? And if I was blowing into town and about to take on the new do-gooder guy who's in town, shaking up things and
Reynolds Brandwith. Right.
Reynold Bandwidth. And what I would do before I bust into the saloon where I knew that he was about to try and... because I know he's going to try and jump out the window onto the back of his horse. I'd go and I'd put spikes on the backs of all the horses.
Ah! Or get the... what you do is... this takes a lot of pre-planning, but maybe you're the sort of outlaw who likes pre-planning. They exist, I'm sure. What you do is... You get the hitching post and you adjust it so that it's slightly further away so that when they jump out, instead of onto the horse's back, they land on the horse's head. There you go.
Breaking the horse's neck.
Yes.
Then you get free horse meat. because I mean, you know.
That's the scam. That's what they don't tell you about the bandit business. Is that all the money's in horse meat? Mm-hmm. It's like running a service station. You don't make your money from selling petrol. You make it from selling the candy at the counter.
100%.
So it is with banditry. It's not the I don't know, the small villages that you terrorize for no reason. Okay, it's the horse meat.
It's the horse meat we made along the way.
Yeah. It's not the reward that you get for catching the bandit, right? It's the horse meat that you get to salt and eat for the rest for at least 3 days before it goes bad. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
There's also a great scene where you take the dead horse and you tie its hooves together and then you sling it across the back of a person, I guess, and then give the person a slap on the ass, and they trot off carrying the...
Sure, or what you could do is you could...
The horse corpse.
You could prop up the horse corpse near the bar where you tie it up again, near the window again.
Yeah.
And then you try to catch another bandit, and he jumps out and lands on it, starts tenderizing your meat for you.
Ah, free tenderizing.
That's all that elbow grease that you don't have to
100%.
Act on. And then eventually what you could do is create a whole energy-based system based on bandits jumping out of windows and then collecting that energy.
And you could finish it up.
They jump out.
You could finish it up by putting a layer of glue on the window that they jump out of, so that the last time they jump, they smash that, glass comes down, and that chops the meat for you.
Yes,
then you've got your cuts.
Good. That's excellent.
They used to, I think real cowboys used to do that. They would divide cuts of meat by where someone would land on the horse if they fell.
The old cowboy horse sashimi glass pane method of... It was a real artistry, ancient artistry that's actually quite been lost. It's one of the few American art forms. There's jazz, and there's cowboy horse window pane sashimi.
You're not going to like me trying to turn this into a separate sketch, Alistair, but I do think the idea of generating electricity with some sort of paddle wheel system, sort of a form of hydroelectricity, but that relies on the falling bodies of
Bodo electricity,
who've been who've been shot up on the top level of the saloon and then fall down. If you've got your thing set up in the right place with the paddles, each one lands on the paddle, spins it around. You know, there doesn't look like there's a lot of water in some of these Wild West towns. You've got to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this whole new generation system comes into play.
And then
they get themselves up there.
And then slowly over time, you get the sort of like companies that rise up out of those, you know, specific power sources.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometime in the 20th century, we start realizing that bandits are not a renewable resource.
Yes.
So we need to figure out a way to switch over to a non-renewable resource. Mm. Wait, did I get that wrong way around? I think I got that the wrong way around.
No. Well, you got it the right way around the first time, and then you
messed it up
halfway through.
But what you could do is you could set up the terms of society, because you're a person with a lot of money, and make sure that there's no sort of social safety net, so people kind of
fall into the water wheel instead of the safety net. Exactly.
Well, of course, there's all the other places they could fall. There's the metaphoric. I mean, if you could catch their metaphorical fall as well and get energy from that. But I guess if they needed to also steal to get things, then you could. It's essentially we're inventing the prison system in America, but you get people to steal things, then they become bandits, then they jump, or they get, you know, they get into a bar fight, fall into the thing again. The other question that I had, I liked that a lot, and that's all written down, but what I didn't get straight away was Andy's first saloon idea. What was the relevance of the spikes?
Well, you know that the guys, when they're trying, when they know that you're busting into the saloon or the cat house or whatever, they're going to try and get away by jumping out the window, whistling up old Betsy.
Yeah.
You know, she comes trotting along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, somebody who can whistle. Betsy the cow. I mean, why are there no cowboys that ride cows?
Yeah, very true. That's true.
Very true.
Also, why are there no horses called Betsy?
Mm. And they, so she trots up, and then you hop out, you know, landing perfectly on the back of your horse. Mm-hmm. But if they've put like a blade or just substituted it with a much more malnourished horse, such that its spine is so sharp that you become just sliced in two as you land on its back, you know, that's doing their work for them, basically. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And so the idea is you want to just kill the person? Like you're sort of using a method.
Well, they're your enemy. They were your enemy jumping out the window. That's why they're trying to get away from you by jumping out the window. It's not just the way they leave buildings.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to be very honest here, and I'm going to tell you that that has made more sense to me than anything I learned at school. So...
Well, that's great. I wonder...
Alistair, the whole time listening to me thinking... But this is going to hurt the person.
I know.
I don't think he realizes.
I think I was thinking about how, because his name was something Bandwidth in the end.
Yeah.
And Gerald Bandwidth, I think. And then I was thinking, like, I was like, well, he's spreading, you know, sort of broadband from town to town, bringing them information. But they don't appreciate it. They think he's a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I thought maybe, I wasn't 100% sure, I thought that maybe your thing was like, this guy is rich in spikes or blades or something like that, and that's why he can put blades on every horse, and he's like, he's like Oprah, just going like, you get some blades, and you get some blades, and yeah, I don't understand. Mm. But he's kind of just treating the horses like sort of the edges of a building, like that we these days do to stop sort of pigeons from going on them, or skateboarders or whatever.
Exactly. It's actually a big problem. The dropping cowboy.
And then as society progresses, we can slowly move from a non-renewable resource like falling bandits and start moving over to a renewable resource like metaphors. So you can remove the safety net, as it were, and then metaphors can fall into the water wheel and start turning that, and then we're good again. Society slowly,
Absolutely. Slowly
we stop polluting with dirty bandits, and we switch over to clean metaphors.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a great way to get energy from literature.
Yes, 100%. I mean,
people wouldn't have so much of a problem with poets if the power of their poetry, the emotional power, could be somehow turned into kinetic energy.
Well, subsidized poets, I think.
Used to boil water. Like, I mean, imagine if you could write a poem so powerful that you could tell it to a pot of water on the stove or anywhere and use it to boil eggs. You know, that's poetry to me. That's...
But the idea that you have to keep going, like, until it's done, you go, oh, man, I don't know if I got this many stanzas in me today.
I once met a man from Nantucket. Bubble, 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 bubble.
I've written this thing. I mean, look, that's what I was going to think about. These metaphors. Because me and Andy have been thinking about photons a lot recently, we're doing a little bit of science-y stuff. And so a photon particle has no weight, has no mass.
Yes.
Right? And I feel like that's what a metaphor is like. But because a photon has no mass, it means it goes the speed of light. And do you think that metaphors would travel at the speed of light? Because you use them,
you
tell them by sound.
Can I pause for a second? Are you trying to describe a metaphor with a metaphor?
That's a very meta metaphor, isn't it?
It is.
Look, it's very weird because I am using a very real world example for something that is quite... it's like a reverse metaphor.
I might be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to use. I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to use the name in the definition. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
Look, does the word the dictionary has itself in itself.
True. That's true.
And
it's
presents
recursive. Sorry, the dictionary's fine with it. Please continue.
I wonder if you'd hope that if you were making the dictionary and selling the dictionary, you wouldn't need to include the definition of the word dictionary in the dictionary. And that...
dictionary, that, the definition of dictionary in the dictionary just says C and nothing else. You're already looking at it, so it doesn't need to refer you somewhere else. It just says C.
C?
Ah, yes. Yes, I see.
You're looking at it. Get a life, Kojak. I don't know I don't know what any of those words mean, but I mean, I get life. But
All the talk about falling and generating power did make me think of one thing, which is that recently they knocked down the towers, the cooling towers at the old Hazelwood Power Station here in Victoria.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
One of Australia's biggest and dirtiest coal-fired power stations. And seeing all of those towers, huge towers, there were eight of them, come crashing down. You know, and all that stored kinetic energy in those towers falling down like that. You'd think it would be great if there was some way we could have turned that into electricity.
And yes.
I realize that in a way that's the least renewable of all the forms of energy. The energy that you get from destroying non-renewable energy.
But we're always destroying things. So surely, if the tank runs on the destruction, like how my engine, I could put 91 or 98 or whatever and let it into it. Maybe this engine, you can put destroying a power plant or destroying a skyscraper or something like that that needs to come down.
Well, you could put you could just put a small part of a tower of a coal power station just directly into your tank. And then I guess you would just have a little sort of like implosion device in your tank that would make it fall and then make your car go like that.
There would be a version of let's imagine not steampunk, right? But this is gravitational potential energy punk, right?
Yes.
And what it is everything, every mechanism is powered merely by falling rocks. Okay, and so you want to drive your car a certain distance. Your car has a huge ladder, right? Or maybe there are service stations where you can go and do this. Maybe there'd be buildings that are really really tall, and up the top of these buildings they've got big rocks, right? Big round rocks, and then your car has a really 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 long pipe that goes all the way up to this petrol station. Right, and then the pipe comes down to your car and then bends at a little L shape and then pokes out the back. And then the rock falls down the pipe, and as it falls, it pushes the air down out of the way in front of it and out the back of your car. Right, and then, you know, if the pipe's high enough, I'm talking 2-3 kilometers up in the air, then as it falls, that will give you enough push to drive... You know, maybe 2-3 kilometers. Yeah. Who knows?
And this
isn't just for cars. This is everything, like your little wristwatch. Okay, you've got to hold your wrist perfectly level because there's a pipe that goes 2-3 kilometers up in the air, and it just has a little pebble falling down in it, and it turns the air turns the hands, blows the hands around for you to be able to tell what the time is.
What I love about this is that it implies. The scenario where, and I know the two of you are going to absolutely love this, it implies the scenario where there's a board meeting from an energy conglomerate, and one person, a scientist up the end, is explaining something to the board, and they say, hey, so to get those rocks up to those skyscrapers, we use a rock at a slightly higher skyscraper as the energy to get that rock up there. But the problem is we need to keep building taller skyscrapers to get those rocks up to taller and taller spaces where we're in a space race, as it were, to try and make a tall skyscraper as high as possible.
Yeah. I guess you could imagine that this is a world in which it started out where there was lots of just big piles of rocks, right?
Yes.
Just all around. And so they base their whole economy around falling rocks.
Yeah, but
then,
you know, those rocks all built up into mountains, peaks, if you will, and then at a certain point, they've dropped them all down and they reach what's called peak. Thank you.
Yeah, and then they had to start using the rocks to start elevating the rocks, so that it, like, and then to do this thing where they had to keep building new piles, but using the other lesser piles. Maybe you could you could drop sort of 5. Lower rocks to make one rock go really high.
Oh,
you absolutely could. You absolutely could. I like it. By the way, in this world, they have oil, but they just use it for greasing the rocks and the pipes.
And well, they've got that, and they've just got those like a seesaw. They've got seesaws for launching rocks. And then the only way that they can actually get more energy once all the rocks are down is that they just have to start digging holes.
Oh, but imagine how they... Oh, yeah, and dropping them down holes.
Yeah.
But imagine how these people would have dealt with an impending meteorite. Like, the race would be on to build the biggest possible seesaw, right?
Yes. And
pile up enough rocks on the other end of the seesaw to get all the way up there.
It's a completely different form of the movie Armageddon. Instead of getting like oil drillers or whatever to crack in, they're excited. They're excited. They got to get all these people who work in the energy industry to figure out how to harness this big rock that's fallen really far.
They're like, this is going to set us up for another 200 years.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get so many rocks so high up.
It's an apocalypse if we're not struck by a meteorite. Yeah,
exactly. Well, there's no more energy left. This rock is our last chance.
How are we going to get any more energy? Ah, I keep slipping on all this oil. What have we got to get rid of this oil?
Yeah. Hopefully the rock will burn it and get it out of the way. I think, look, that turned out huge. That's got a real arc, that one.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a lesson in it.
Yes. You know,
a metaphor.
Mm. Not that we'll ever know, but we'll be able, even if we can't figure out the meaning of the metaphor, we will at the very least be able to get a tiny little bit of energy as we shoot it towards, you know, through however we're going to collect this metaphor energy, but maybe just speaking it into water.
I know you haven't written this down, Alistair, but I want us to remember the idea of writing poetry so powerful that you can use it to boil water.
I have written it down.
You've written it down?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Metaphor, source of power, poem, pot of water.
You didn't believe in him. Yes. And yet here he is. He proved you wrong.
You know, that could lead to a whole, you know, an alternative to the induction cooker.
Mm.
That, you know, you can...
Oh, well, how about this? The deduction cooker.
Oh.
Yes.
I mean, it's a similar thing.
Tell me how it works.
I mean, this is basically a similar idea, but you basically stand next to it and you say, well, if water is wet and I am dry... if I touch the water, then either I will become wet or it will become dry.
But I see.
You know what this is? This is because knowledge is power, right? Yeah. And you're deriving a new knowledge from first principles and using that to power it.
I see.
And that's another metaphor.
I see you have a basic edition. I shilled out a little bit more money and I got the Poirot edition. Mine, heats so well. Poirot comes into the room with his little handkerchief or whatever and blows his nose, walks up and down the line of suspects and then turns around. And as soon as his mouth opens, the kettle is a boil.
Yeah. Just the only problem is you've got to prepare 6 or 7 different meals, all that could plausibly be eaten, and then he only ends up boiling one of them.
Look, I'm writing it down. I didn't think I was going to write it down, but deduction cooking.
This is what I'm up against, Adam. Yeah. He prejudges every single idea. He knows as soon as, just from the look in your eyes, he's like, I'm not going to like this. And you don't stand a chance.
Well, you could maybe get a multi-burner system if you got the Poirot in brackets Murder on the Orient Express edition. Spoilers. But yeah, if you got something like that, you could multi-burn and get multiple deductions going on at once.
Is the spoiler that Poirot is in the Murder on the Orient Express?
No, the spoiler is, and skip ahead a few seconds if you don't want to spoil it for Murder on the Orient Express.
If you've been saving Murder on the Orient Express.
They're all murderers.
Oh my God.
There you go. Yeah.
I see. And so then you could sort of make a full like 8-course meal.
100%,
All through boiled water.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
boiled potatoes. Talking soup. We're talking...
But, don't you feel that by doing that, like, there are, in terms of the possible plots for a a detective mystery, right? Mm. So apparently the first mystery story ever was this one by Edgar Allan Poe where it turns out a monkey did it. Is that right? The first detective story.
I remember that from a Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, anyway, sorry, go on.
But I think, and so like, you know, there are a certain number of big twist plots that you can only really do once because their power resides only in the fact that nobody's ever mm-hmm. thought of doing that yep. before, right? So we started out early burning a great possible plot, a monkey did it, right? And then, you know, you go through and you get your first unreliable narrator. I think that might also be Poe, where it turns out that's the guy telling the story what done the murder. Right, ooh. And then you go through, and then you get your Agatha Christie coming across this one. Mm. What if they all did it? Everybody did the murder, okay? Mm. But are there any other possible versions of that? Right?
I guess somebody dropped a piano on somebody, but then removed the piano, right? You take away the piano.
Uh huh. Go right? on.
You drive it away. You put it in a lake or something.
Like yeah. that.
Yeah.
Right. If detectives find a piano in the lake, they're not going to be like, the murder weapon. They're going to go, somebody's dumped a piano in the lake. I'll just ignore that for a minute and focus on this more important murder.
this more important crushing murder.
Crushing. I know, but no one's going to think you're going to leave the body there. But take away the piano.
I think crushing is an interesting modus operandi for a serial killer. You know,
yeah,
the Westlake Crusher, right? And every victim has been crushed with a different household object. And what's fun about this is that I'm thinking about, you know, production-wise, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're going to save a lot of money on corpse makeup and that sort of thing because we'll just all we need to do is get a couple of cans of diced tomatoes. Well, you know, those big cans that you get from a wholesale place.
And maybe a packet of minced meat.
Yeah. packet of minced meat and a few...
One packet, that's enough for a body.
Mm-hmm.
A few cannelloni, like those... what are those long sort of round... pasta things, you just smash a few of those in there for some bones or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a little rigatoni just to mix things up.
Sure, yeah. Sure. For the ear
the
bones.
The cannelloni were his legs, the rigatoni were his fingers.
Mm-hmm. Finger bones, the old twisty finger bones.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a shame. That is a shame that our bones don't twist, like aren't little twisty things like that, because it'd be great to do this. That's me. I'm twisting my finger for those who are only listening, which is everybody.
You mean that you can physically, like another option for your finger, like you could hold your fist steady and another option for your finger as well as the standard bend at the knuckle is that it almost has a wrist-like function in each of those knuckle joints where they can also rotate. Is that what you're after?
It is
now. A pointed finger can just twist on its own. That's a good thing to put into like a horror movie or something. Because I haven't seen that done, and that could be another possible ending for a detective movie. Nobody's done that. it was done by somebody whose fingers can twist.
Maybe that's just a special quirk of the Westlake Crusher.
I have assembled you all here to discover who the killer could be. He was someone incredibly flexible. Could it have been you, the maid? You, the butler? Gumby? Could it have been you, the sous chef?
Yeah. You, the acrobat?
But I think...
You, the person, the contortionist, or you, the person with the spinning fingers?
Well, a simple... Mo, is that you? Mo from the Three Stooges?
Sorry. When my fingers spin, they make the hum.
I think a murder at a contortionist convention is quite satisfying.
Mm.
They're all contortionists, right? And the mystery is that the killer came in through the front door and not through one of the...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many, you know, air vents or small openings or a tennis racket. No, the murderer didn't come in through a de-strung tennis racket.
The murderer snuck in through the house's unstrung tennis racket.
Well, the murderer didn't in this case, and that's what makes it so interesting, that it wasn't one of the contortionists.
It was the coach.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting, isn't it, that like very often in sports coaching, the coaches themselves, particularly in swimming, I've noticed this, they don't have to be the most athletic looking of people.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think that...
Would you say the most athletic is usually the swimmers?
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly in that context. Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard in some respects to look particularly athletic when you're up against Olympic swimmers. But I think you could have a contortionist coach who is very, very stiff, quite, you know, immobile.
And personality wise too.
As well, yeah.
And dead.
Yes. Very good. Rigor mortis.
Imagine if the person who killed the dead guy was the person who was already dead somehow. Maybe the Westlake Crusher dropped them on him.
Yes. Yes. They were or the corpse is of the Westlake Crusher and their last kill was with their own body as the murder implement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He went and stood on he went and died up on top of the chimney. Strategically.
He had his body made entirely of ice so that it would melt away and they'd never find the murder weapon.
Yeah.
He had his body made entirely of ice.
Okay, this is how he would do it. He would put himself into a vat of acid in a cool room. Mm-hmm. So he brings the vat of acid into the cool room. Right?
Mm.
The cool room with the weak floor. He puts this big vat of acid there. Then he gets in. He dissolves in this vat of acid.
Yeah.
The cool room, which is actually a very cool room. It's a freezer.
Yeah.
It freezes the vat of acid.
Yeah.
It turns
yeah.
into ice. And then the floor, which has been strategically weakened using more acid that is that was dripping whilst the melting was happening, then causes the floor to collapse. It falls through, lands on the governor, whose room is just underneath a huge
room. His room is underneath the ice room
which he classic loved because he could always get ice through a little tube straight into his room. And then the crusher dissolves and disappears. Well, he's already dissolved. So then he melts and he's just in the carpet.
My favorite part about that is presumably the part where Poirot is looking around the room and he sees where the ice comes out of and like the cogs are working in his mind. And you see, wait a minute. It would appear that the murderer is in this very room.
And then he points to the rug.
Yeah. And they've been squelching around on this rug the entire time.
We never suspected that huge hole in the ceiling.
I think crushing somebody with an enormous block of ice, if you for some bizarre reason are confident that nobody is going to come and find what's left of the body before mm-hmm. this ice has defrosted,
mm-hmm.
Then I think it's actually a pretty groovy method.
Yeah.
Especially if the block of ice is falling into, it's like you're crushing it in like a hot yoga kind of room.
Mm.
Because then, as long as the
hot... there's a hot yoga room underneath the courtroom?
Yeah.
It's a hot yoga room or a sauna or something like that underneath the ice room.
This is the worst designed fridge ever.
Well, it's two separate businesses. They're allowed to live on top and underneath one another. And they are. Not share energy bills in any way.
I think they're both draining a lot of energy. I think they should be sharing energy bills. Yeah. They probably save a bit of money going in together.
That's true. Yeah, if you buy more, you kind of do get a slight discount, maybe. I want to get on some. Go.
The Bikram yoga people. You know what they're going to be? They're all going to be very flexible. There's going to be a lot of finger spinners amongst them.
Just base of finger wrists. That's what it is.
That's what would
spin your finger like that. And owls would be able to spin them even more. Just they can do full 180. I don't know.
Owls can spin their fingers all the way around, I've heard. Yeah.
Look, there's nothing to that at all. Because none of us can think of a single use for a spinning finger. That's the problem.
I think sort of like cleaning out your ear. Like, I think it would be interesting to just poke one in and then not have to engage the wrist and just spin the finger. But
you know,
it's marginal. It's a marginal gain.
Here's something. So you know how in like a heist movie or something like that, someone will have that little device that'll cut a hole in glass or something like that.
Oh yes.
You could on your finger just really grow out the nail, and then you do the little spin. You don't even need the machine, so someone could check you for it, pat you down. Maybe you're getting into the art gallery. They pat you down. They're like, hasn't got the glass cutting machine. Mm-hmm. Just a really long weird fingernail. Go on, you go.
And then you would do it like this.
That would exactly be it. That would 100% be every element correct.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
So you're already in the art gallery. Oh, but you're needing to get into one of the cases.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To steal the baseball diamond.
The baseball diamond, yes.
Yeah. Look.
First discovered by Lewis Baseball in 1982.
Lewis Baseball. Well, you see my ancestor was a baseball player. I mean, I don't know when they were giving out names. Do you think there was a year where they gave out names? Where they went, all right, everybody gets last names now. And so
I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, one person did it, and then everyone else started doing it.
Mm.
One person was like, yes, okay.
No, go. I want to hear your version.
One person was like, you know what? I've been doing so much damn smithing. I think I'm going to... Look, just... Everyone, you can just call me John. You just call me Smith. Just call me Smith.
Call me John Smithin'.
Whatever. Yeah. And everyone else were like, Smith's good. Carpenter? I'm Joey Carpenter.
Yeah. Because they were for a while doing that thing of like, my name is Elevar Deloxley. And so you were putting like the place, Elevar de Loxley.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Of such a place, yeah.
And I don't know if
Or Stevenson or something like that.
Steverson, yeah. And then so that puts the name of your dad in there.
Mm.
But it was only the name of the first dad. Or is it in Norway or something like that you do just get a new last name that's based on your dad's first name?
I don't think they're still updating the names. I think that they locked them in. It's sort of like the point in the history of the universe where there was a period just after the Big Bang when all the physical laws sort of became locked in. You know, the universe expanded to a certain point, and then it was like, no, okay, that's it. From now on, this is what gravity is going to be like. We just shut that down, and nobody's coming up with any more last names. profession-based last names or dad-based last names. Mm. Nobody's surname is Dad, which is a shame.
That is a shame. Why is that?
What about Tom Papa?
You can get things like Papos or something like that.
Papos.
Yeah.
I always read Papos as Knievel. That's my problem. I don't know where I was going with that. All right.
Carnivale, are you related to that that cruise ship that tipped over in the Mediterranean?
A cousin, yeah, but a distant cousin.
Yeah, okay.
Did you hear how that happened? I think the guy was like, the captain was like, let's go close to the thing. There's some people we need to wave at or whatever. we need to show people that we can like turn close to the shore. And then it's all like, whoa.
Uh-oh.
Is that what happened to the Titanic?
Yes.
Was he going to wave at some... Mm-hmm.
Penguins on the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to not say penguins.
some friends of
penguins. I think it would have been polar bears, actually. It would have been up north, right? I don't think penguins get that far north. Or maybe
that's why I was trying to not say penguins.
Oh, was it north? Yeah. I just always assumed it was down south. But that doesn't make sense.
The Titanic. You assumed that the Titanic.
I've never thought about it. I've just never thought about it. I've just put it in my mind down near Antarctica.
You got the Titanic, the real-life ship, and the plane from Lost, the fake, not real-life plane, confused. And I get that. Mm. I understand.
Yeah.
Did that plane hit an iceberg?
It crashed or something. I don't know. I only watched season one.
Was the island in the... Was the Lost Island, did they ever give the exact location? Rough
look? I think it was... Look, once again, spoilers. But I think it was meant to be hell or something.
Yeah, right. Mm.
So not exact. Then.
So
yeah.
So is that in the South Pacific?
Yeah, maybe. Look, once again, only seen season one. Everything else I've just kind of heard people, you know, half remembered conversations at a party. I think it was maybe not hell but purgatory. Oh. I think the island was meant to be purgatory.
Purgatory seems like the best one.
Yeah. Look, and that is exactly what happened to the passengers on the Titanic. They also went the iceberg was purgatory for them in a way.
That's right.
Can someone save me from this? No, this is not going anywhere.
They're lucky because they live on forever through purgatory? Our stories. Burgatory.
There you go.
Does that constitute saving you from that?
Yeah.
Look, the topic changed. So yeah, thank you.
We have so many ideas today. So I'm going to take us straight to our three words from the listener. I don't know if you know this, Adam. But we have listeners, and sometimes they can support us on Patreon, and they can suggest three words that we'll use to come up with a sketch idea. And today's listener is Josh Sean.
Hey, Josh.
Josh Sean.
Hi, Josh Sean. I hope we haven't already done this one. I don't know if we probably have.
I think I would remember a name like Josh Sean. You don't get a more blatant use of a first name as a surname than Sean.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, unless it's...
Sean, you would have thought would be a classic. That you look at that and you'd be like, that's going to be a first name forever, man. Mm. It's never going to be a surname. But 100%. We all grow up, we all become squares. Just like... surname Sean.
The only name that could be maybe more blatant would be if his name was Josh First Name.
Yes.
Yeah. My last name is first name. Who's on first? First name. Anyway.
I mean, let's imagine a version of who's on first, but the name of the person who's on first is not on first.
Okay. Now,
tell me that's not a funnier sketch.
Yeah.
I mean, one of us be Abbott, the other one be Costello. One of us be Abbott, another one be Costello, and then the third one is that, you know, the third person in that classic sketch. Mm-hmm.
The audience.
Talks. Yes.
Maybe one of their writers.
So, who's on first?
I think his name's...
not on first.
Not on first. I think his first name's Somebody Who's. Somebody Who's Not On First is on first.
What? And scene.
Well, who's on second? Well, What's the
There is no person on second.
There's
That's
nobody
their
on
name.
Second. There's nobody
there
on
is
second.
No.
There is no second.
Hello, I'm Mr. No Person on Second. First name, there is.
I mean, there's so many variations.
And let me tell you, my baseball career was short-lived.
they kept trying
to assign
someone.
Who's on third? Who's on third is a man called I Don't Want to Do This Anymore. No, but
There's
who's on
the...
I don't want to do this anymore.
What about fourth? I told you this wouldn't work.
And fourth is home.
What about fifth base? Diminishing returns. Ever heard of this?
I think you've run out of bases.
And kissing.
Well, diminishing returns, there you go, though, as well. That makes sense.
Mm.
What was the first guy's name? I'm going to write this down, even though it's very silly.
Somebody who's not on first. Oh.
Perfect.
But that always did bug me about that sketch, right?
Yeah.
Is that the names aren't real names.
Yeah.
Right? Like the names for the people that they've chosen on those sketches. Like, that's supposedly like the classic sketch that everybody knows. And it doesn't work.
The premise
like,
is very weak.
They're not, mm-hmm. It's weak.
We should let Abbott Costello know. Do they have like a public facing email address that we can contact them on?
I think their DMs are open.
And we'll pitch them Blades on Horses. And then all right. Do you guys want to hear our three...
Blades in Saddles.
Now, Blades in Saddles. Oh, that's very good, Andy. You can be the title.
Yeah.
All right. Look, we can't just come up with sketches based on the name of the person. We have to come up use their actual words. So Josh Sean has suggested three words. Adam, would you like to guess what one of the words is?
Ooh, all right. Is the... have you given me a clue already?
No.
That I didn't realize?
Just
no? All
he's
right.
given us
so
three words.
Guess,
what's one of the words?
Well, there's only so many words. So, is one of them giraffe?
You couldn't be further from the truth. Andy?
Damn it.
Do you want to have a guess?
Evangelion?
No, not even close. The three words are time, travel... and fetish.
All right. Time travel fetish. That's a string.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's essentially already a sketch idea in there about, I guess, somebody who
fetishizes time travel.
Oh, yeah, I guess that could be too. I thought it was travel fetish, and it's a guy who has time for his travel fetish. Finally,
yeah. What about somebody who has a fetish for premature ejaculating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But they,
I can't come unless I've already come.
Oh no. Oh no.
And that's great. And so the only way to do it is to travel back in time.
Ah!
Wow.
Is that
right?
Yeah,
that works.
Wow.
Oh my god, you took that hot nonsense and you made sense out of it. Wow. That rules.
Wow.
That makes sense. Wow.
Is this what the movie The Time Traveler's Wife is about? Her just
yes.
look of disappointment as he does this yet again.
As a second version
again,
of him walks
yes.
into the room.
you came, but it was too early. And then, he can come.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That
somehow worked.
Is that even a paradox? Like, I guess, you know, I think that's one of those neat loops that you can probably get away with where it just...
Yeah.
How's the first
itself.
Person coming? Wait.
Well, it could even just be a lie. It doesn't even need a... Like when you're looking at You know, I don't know if either of you have ever had this experience. I don't want to assume. But if you're ever looking at porn online, that's not necessarily always a real thing.
I'm interested in checking it out one day. But yeah, go on.
Yeah.
So what,
you can
go
to this place.
Google porn or?
There's a website, www.porn.com.
Okay.
.au. .au. If you go just .com, it'll take you to the US site.
A lot of it doesn't work down here or something.
they use a lot of positions that are not compatible with our energy. The 240
volts.
They
spell honor differently. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
At the moment, the Australian entertainment industry is going through ructions because of the influence of the big US streaming sites and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of push for them to get local content quotas. And I do hope that we get there, and then the next thing will, of course, be taking on the big porn websites and getting them to have local content quotas as well.
Mm. Yeah. 100%.
Wait, were you going somewhere with this porn thing?
No, that was basically it. That's
sorry.
That's it.
No, that's good. I mean,
the classic
it's just,
improv line.
I mean, it's good to also just be informed about porn.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, then I will take us through today's sketches, if that's okay. Please
please do.
Say anything if you guys want. We've got the worst stuntman, which is, it's just a very graceful person, actually very beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
But terrible for your action movie. So
can
I guess...
I know, I'm sorry to bring up porn again, and it feels a bit dumb to talk about. But I'm just
very gauche.
I'm interested, and I don't know if I would look this up myself, but I'm wondering if you went to www.notporn.com.
Oh.
What do you think it would be? I mean, it must be a website, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And there would be something there, and I'm just wondering what it would be.
I would give it 50-50 chance. It's either a very religious, maybe Christian website that's like anti-porn, or other 50%, it's a porn website.
Yeah.
And it's then the 50%, it's both.
Mix it all together.
For us, Al?
Look, it's a beautiful website. It says notporn.com. This is not the Australian version, so...
They spell honor differently.
But
then
it looks like it's kind of just one of these, like, hey, we've written some articles. There's one that says Italians... we should celebrate instead of Christopher Columbus.
Well,
I know one. Bloody our guest, Adam Carnevale.
Hey! I want to learn about Italians that are worth celebrating. What should I go to? Oh, notporn.com.
Wait, it's time for the Illuminati to address its diversity issue. This could be a comedy website, maybe.
Maybe.
Illuminati, that also sounds a bit Italian.
Hang on, wait. Illuminati. Mm, yeah, no, it does. Yep, checks out.
I think it might be a Roman, maybe it could be Latin.
Yeah, mayhaps.
Mayhaps. Did you really say mayhaps? Because that's a beautiful word.
I like a mayhaps.
Yeah, I will absolutely add that into the lexicon. Andy, we're adding mayhaps to Two in the Think Tank's lexicon.
Sure. What about Perby?
Perby? How do you say that?
What does it mean?
Is that instead of maybe?
Well, mayhaps is combining maybe and perhaps, and I was combining perhaps and maybe. Mm-hmm. Perby.
Ah!
Yeah, sure.
Perby.
Or per flower.
Mm.
All right. I am going to just move on to... All right, so we got that. The best defensive driving is offensive driving, and this is, of course, the old switcheroo that happens with the, unfortunately, when the Carnevale and the Knievel drivers, driving instructors, get mixed up, and one sends the offensive driver to the defensive driving class, and then the offensive driving teacher that should have, no, the defensive driving teacher that should have gone to that goes to the big smash derby where everybody misses each other. Sort of like all, opposite magnets repelling each other or like magnets repelling each other.
Yeah.
They never touch.
Mm. Beautiful. I think that's going to be the most coherent sketch that comes out of this episode.
Then we've got saloon-based falling idiot energy generation.
Yeah, there it is. there it is. Look, I love that, but wow.
And then we've got blades on horses, which is another sort of saloon-based sketch. Maybe I don't think I got in the entire gist of the sketches, which is why I've written down blades on horses.
There's so much to cover. It's a big topic.
Yeah,
I'm almost. That's one of the ones where I'm baffled. You couldn't understand because I feel like I explained it so well, and it was already painfully clear. But maybe the listeners disagree.
But I think my idea, my thinking of it is like, I was like, and maybe I'm only continuing talking about this because I feel like it frustrates Andy. But I guess the idea is that it's not like a full sketch, you know what I mean? Like it's more like a very small part of a big movie where he's put blades.
Yeah, you're right. It would be such a shame if our big movie had any small parts in it.
No.
You know, any moments that somehow build to something greater. But you're right.
I think there's no place movies, for that kind of thing. I don't think movies should be made of small parts. I think when I make a movie, it's going to be completely indivisible. It's going to be a whole. It's going to be like a single-celled organism.
Yeah,
one
it's going to be
a single shot.
One
an
shot.
An enormous.
Only watch one thing will happen.
An undigestible theme. It's just solid theme the whole way through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we've got metaphor, source of power. And so you could use a poem to boil a pot of water. Right. See? And you can just do a couple of stanzas, get that water boiling. Mm. Then maybe put the lid on after you put the rice in. And then let that keep saying a few more stanzas. And then you do that method where you turn off the fire. So you could just stop saying poem and let it kind of cook in that 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. You've given it plenty to think about, you know?
Absolutely. That rice is going to get fluffy with wisdom. I don't know. Energy collected from destroying coal power plants. That's, you know, and I think that's another fun one because it becomes very unsustainable very quickly. Then people, but then the dirtiest of industries is the industry that just builds coal fire power plants just to knock them down.
Oh, just to knock them down.
Yeah. Never used.
Yeah. It's the sort of the beef version of like energy, you know, how like beef uses so much, energy or whatever.
Yeah, consumes so much.
Then we've got the gravitational potential energy punk. It's a whole new genre of you know, writing and books and films and things like that, all based on this world that started having lots of piles of rocks. And
maybe this is what the coal-fired power energy needs, because at the moment they are the bad guys, right? They're unequivocally the bad guys because it's the worst one, right? But what if they could invent something worse?
Like a thank you for smoking type thing.
I didn't catch that, sorry.
That's okay.
You
like
broke
a,
up.
Like a oh, yeah. No. Am I better now?
Yes.
You're so good now.
You're perfect. All right.
Okay, I just said like a thank you for smoking style thing where you got to turn like this awful evil industry and flip it and make it look nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the way I'm proposing that is that they find a way to generate electricity from burning animals. You know, like that's if it good. Was beef.
Alive.
This electricity comes from beef.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and it would smell good, but the screaming would put you a little bit off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That's a good idea. Then we got deduction cooking. I mean, look, you know, we've got Poirot cooking whole, you know, seven course meals. Then we got the Westlake Crusher. This is when we went into the mystery part of the episode.
I love that.
Person who finds different ways of crushing people and then leaving not a trace except for a crushed body and his signature card his name with his name and number written on it.
His signature MO that he leaves his body at the scene of the crime.
That's right. Every time I leave my body there, laying next to the dead body. And I always wake up and go, "What happened? I was having a bad dream."
Look, it's the killer. Ah, it's another signature of the Westlake killer. When will we catch them?
Ah, well, off you go. Then we got somebody who's not on first. It's our the new who's on first sketch.
New and improved.
And then there's finally inspired by Josh Sean. It's a I can't come unless I've already come time travel sketch. The guy who has a fetish for premature ejaculation. For his own premature ejaculation. I don't know why it has to be premature.
It becomes reductive where I think he has to keep going back and back and back and back and back. Right, always to try and...
Yeah. Could he go back and then forward to when he finally does come?
He has to go forward. Yeah.
Oh. It's tricky. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It's a real chicken and the egg situation.
What came first, me or future me?
Very good.
I guess if it is future you, though, there's a chance that you could have a time machine and arrive before.
Yeah.
And future you is you.
Mm.
Interesting. You've really created a real pickle. A real
paradox,
pickle,
if you will.
You see, the guy turned into an actual pickle. It was great. Anyway, let's wrap this up. So
it was funny.
We're going to go into the music bit now. Lam 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 lam
lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam
lam lam
lam lam lam
lam lam lam
lam
lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam lam thank you very much, Adam, for coming on our program.
Thank you for having me.
I am so sorry. You didn't promote your thing yet.
I didn't. You're right. Oh, no. People have started tuning out. I got to be quick. You can catch me on D&D is for Nerds on the Sense Pants Radio Network. Just you can Google either one of those. You can find me at Retro Archetype on pretty much any social media. And we're also doing a special series for the next about a month with Stupid Old Studios, where we're doing a live D&D show. You can find that at sospresents.com.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are great. And there's all sorts of stuff all across the Sans Pants Radio Network. Mm. And I would personally be happy if we lost all our listeners to you.
Yeah.
I think,
that's very kind.
Deservedly so.
Say that. No, you're lovely.
No, but I mean, don't take away from the compliment here. We are happy and amazed with the work that you do.
If you
yes, indeed.
This isn't like one of those cultural things where I'm supposed to not accept three times.
No. You have to accept three times, and then we make you accept a fourth time, unless it's rude, or else it's rude.
All right.
So then you can find us at Two and Tank on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm at AlistairTB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
And you can support us on Patreon, or you can...
People have been reviewing us on iTunes, Alistair. They took pity on you after your really transparent begging, and it resulted in a real, real tidal wave of reviews.
They were reviews that made us feel real nice. And
that's nice.
You all know who you are, so thank you very much, and stop it. But, you keep going.
But
don't stop. Keep going.
If you left a review, you've got time to leave another one.
Yeah, keep going. We need this. Thank you so much. Take care of yourselves, and remember, don't die. And we love you.
You.
Thank you, Adam.
Yeah. See
ya. Thank you, Adam.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. This was fun. Is the recording over?
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.